Welcome back to Biff, a podcast about superhero TV shows, movies, and Christmas time is here. My name is Dan Moore, and I'm joined, as always, by my co-hosts and fellow superhero archers. John Maltz is here. Hi, John.
I got this weird email from Marvel earlier saying that I had been retconned out of existence. Mm.
I'm sorry, who are you?
It's taking effect.
Oh, no. Guy Inglis is also here. Hi, Guy.
When I was younger, I used to read a lot of Apple rumors. And, you know, one day I saw somebody just really making fun of Apple rumors with nothing but a keyboard and a smile on his face. And ever since then, I realized that making fun of Apple rumors was something that I could do too. It was for everybody. And I really appreciated that.
Hmm. Who was all that right, mass then? Man?
I don't know.
Yeah.
If I ever find him, I'm going to give him a big hug.
Yeah. Well, we are back to conclude our coverage of Hawkeye on Disney Plus with a recap of episode 6. And later in the show, we'll maybe if we have some extra time, we can talk about some other stuff happening in the MCU. But let's dive into the finale of Hawkeye. So This Is Christmas, brought to you by the one and only John Maltz.
All right. Well, Eleanor meets with the Kingpin. Her husband owed Kingpin money, which she has repaid many times over. She turns out had Armand killed and framed Jack, but says that she draws the line when it comes to Kate. She wants out, something you don't say to Wilson Fisk. Yelena has sent the video of this meeting to Kate. Clint tells her Kingpin isn't going to take this lying down. Kate says it's her mess and he should go home. Clint says that she's his partner.
Aww.
Maya meets with Kingpin and Kazi. She tells them she's giving up on her vendetta and needs some time off. He says sure, but when she leaves, they reveal that they know that she's turned on them and talk about what they're going to do about it. We then get a montage of Clint and Kate making trick arrows, with Kate labeling them this time. Kate tells him the story of how she saw him fighting in the Battle of New York and gives him a nice shot in the arm. The night of the party has arrived. The tracksuits are moving in. There are a lot of tracksuits, it turns out. Kazi takes up position in another building to take out Eleanor. Clint and Kate have the LARPers working the party. Jack is out of jail and just walking around wearing a sword. That's a thing you do, I guess.
Yep, sure.
Yelena arrives and Kate's mom gets there. Kate pulls her into the kitchen and tells her that she knows what's up and that the Kingpin is going to kill her. Kazi goes for the bonus shot of killing Clint, but Clint notices the laser sight, of course. Pandemonium erupts. Jack draws his sword. The LARPers kill the lights and try to get everybody out. Yelena is going to the elevator to go after Clint, and Kate catches up with her. They tussle over the buttons, but Kate eventually pushes them all. Eleanor has rabbited. Clint gets to a window and shoots a gas arrow at Kazi. Kate and Yelena have a fun running fight. Yelena jumps out the window and gets a shot in at Clint, but Kate warns him, and he gets out of the way. Yelena's on the ground, and Kate follows her down rather clumsily. The tracksuits pull up. The one guy thanks her for the advice about his girlfriend.
I love that guy.
It's so great.
I love it. Yeah, she's like, what's with the gun? And he apologizes. He's like, yeah, you know, it's just the job. Yeah. It's great. Yeah.
And then Jack arrives to help her out. Kazi jumps Clint. Clint takes out some tracksuits with bombs and then beats up Kazi. Clint goes out the window and lands in the Rockefeller Center tree, where he befriends an owl. The LARPers suit up and people suddenly start listening to them. So that causes people to suddenly pay attention to them because they look official in their suits, I guess. Maya is about to take off when she sees some pictures of her dad and decides to go back and get these guys. More and more tracksuits. Kate uses an acid arrow to get Clint out of the tree. He lands on the ice. Kate joins him. Fight, fight, fight. Many trick arrows. The tracksuits drive a truck at them, but Kate uses a PIM arrow to shrink it. Then the owl flies off with it. Kate goes after her mom. Yelena attacks Clint. Maya fights Kazi and has to kill him. Fisk catches up to Eleanor and is about to grab her when Kate shoots him, but he shrugs it off because he's the freaking Kingpin. Kate's mom hits him with a car, but he's up again.
Because he's fight, a freaking kingpin. Yeah.
Clint tries to tell Yelena the truth, but she won't hear it. Kingpin breaks all of Kate's arrows, so she grabs one of his cufflinks and does the flip thing and blows him up, basically. Yelena beats on Clint until he does the whistle thing from Black Widow, and it finally gets her. She realizes that they're both on the same side. Eleanor tries to tell Kate everything's going to go back to normal, but Kate lets her get arrested. Kingpin gets away, but Maya catches up to him. He tries to tell her their family, but the camera cuts away and there's a gunshot. One of the LARPers tries to talk Jack into joining their group. Clint punks Kate, and then they say they have to go walk the dog. Cut to Christmas Day at the Barton Ranch. Car pulls up, and Clint gets out. Then Kate and Lucky also get out. The Bartons welcome them, and Clint gives the watch to Laura, who turns it over to show a 19 on the back, the number of Mockingbird. Clint and Kate go outside and torch the Ronin suit and then talk about what her codename is going to be. Our mid-credits scene is the entirety of the Save the City number from Rogers the Musical.
Apparently there was an alternate deleted one where they showed what happened, like basically the truck.
To the track
suits. To the little track suits in the truck in the owl nest or something, which I... Boy, was that a
badly,
great...
Yeah.
Sorry. What happens to them now? I don't know. I have to ask Scott about that. You know? I saw it coming, but it was still a fantastic move.
Yeah, it's like once an owl fits together, you're like, oh, yeah. And I was worried about the owl. I was like, are they going to cut back to the owl? Because the tree fell over. The owl doesn't have a place to live anymore.
The owl's got a toy truck.
Owl is there for a reason.
This episode is full of fantastic fight and stunt scenes.
Yes.
I thought that the office fight with Kate and Yelena is awesome. It's really great.
Yeah, framed like a comic book panel, too.
Exactly.
Fight in the elevator. Tussle in the elevator is
that great. I knew she was going to hit all the buttons, and I still loved it.
Probably my favorite scene. Like, just the way that they get along, and the way Yelena is just
exasperated,
really treating her with kid gloves. Like, come on.
Oh, that's so annoying.
Her first thing is to slap a hand, and then when she goes again, she sort of maneuvers her, and then, you know, like, it keeps escalating a little bit, and you always know that, like, look, if she wanted to end it, she was just, you would not get a chance to press any buttons. I loved it.
Yeah.
There's a very, there's a sister relationship there that sort of mirrors Nat and Yelena, and Yelena is now the big sister.
Right. Yeah, that's a great point.
Yeah.
Yeah, I enjoyed that quite a bit, and their end of the fight where she's like, stop making me like you. And, you know, like, yeah. Sorry, I can't help it.
I like when Yelena discussing her form when she kicked her.
Yes.
That was good form. Like, I felt really good about that kick. Yeah. She's like, oh, that little flip you did, that was great. And I really appreciated it because it's so much of her charm that we got from the movie, right? Like, do you like my jacket? And, like, making fun of, like, Nat's 3-point landing kind of stuff. I really liked it. Those two, I don't know if they've got plans for them, but if they didn't, I'm sure they do now.
Oh, God, They have to look at the chemistry. The chemistry there is so good.
It's so good.
I don't understand why you wouldn't have them team up in some fashion again. It's just fantastic.
Yeah. I was wondering, like, I mean, Yelena is definitely supposed to be younger than Nat. I think she's 25. Isn't Florence Pugh about 25?
That sounds about right.
Something like that. Yeah. So I was wondering, I mean, if they're going to do Young Avengers, if she would be in that group.
25. Sure. Yeah. I mean, like, well, or just new event, right? Like, if you're going to bring Kate in as Hawkeye and, you know, Yelena as Black Widow, and you've got She-Hulk coming up, and you've got, you know, Natalie Portman as Lady Thor and all that stuff, right? Like, you've got Ironheart.
She's got her own series coming up. Right?
You know, Sam as you basically can replace the entire original lineup of the Avengers, essentially. And I think that's probably something they're looking at doing, just sort of as things go along and sort of cycling through, and having the young blood in there makes a lot of sense. But establishing
Stasher, Scott's kid.
Yes. Yeah. Cassie.
Right.
Cassie. Thanks.
Yeah. No, I think there's a lot of possibility in there for some future lineups, and they're still clearly sort of hashing out what they want to do with, or at least publicly, with the next Avengers movie. But, you know. Nobody's an idiot to think that they're going to have one, right? It's not like we're done.
Lying on the table.
Yeah. So, yeah. But it's, I agree. Like,
the new iPhone next year, and guess what?
Right. But yeah,
Marvel wants to keep making money.
The two of them are so good together that I feel like it's just they're a good core to build this kind of thing around. The Trick Arrow stuff is fantastic. I mean, we never really see that much of Hawkeye doing Trick Arrows. There are like little bits here and there, but like that entire scene, I thought was just, it was great. It was just so much fun.
Yeah.
Like, for the magnet arrow to the shrinking arrow to like the sonic arrows and those like things that like shoot out the like needles, like the tranquilizer
bounce,
needles.
The bouncy house arrow, whatever
that is. Yeah, the airbag. Yeah, like all of that stuff was just great.
I like that he shoots a gas arrow at Kazi, who's trying to murder him with a sniper rifle.
Right, sure. Right.
Like it's going for his face and Kazi dodges, which, fine, whatever. I'm cool with that. He dodges it. But then it turns out to be a gas arrow, which is cool. Because he's just trying to
stop.
He's
him.
Not trying to. He's not trying him to kill necessarily. Him. He's just like, look, him. I just need to get rid of this threat, and I'm. He's still
seemed
not
a lot
trying
more
to kill
powerful
people.
In this episode. Like he. Didn't,
well, it is a superhero show, right? You got to
scale it up.
Yeah. But I think he catches that arrow.
Yeah, that's true.
That's what I was going to say. The arrow catches. I did not expect him to catch an arrow.
No, I didn't either. Yeah, and he holds his own in a fight with Clint for a little while before he, eventually.
He sort of gets the drop on him, and if he hadn't got the drop on him, I think nobody believes he would have actually had any chance at that. Right. But yeah.
So the arrow catch is interesting. Well, first of all, I'm fascinated by that as a hilarious thing to try to do. But Clint shoots two arrows. He shoots, I guess, a wood one first because he says it, and then that splits in two and takes the other guys, and then the one that split it in two is going right for Kazi, and he catches that. Arguably it's going slower on account of splitting it out.
I guess it slows down, the friction would slow, let's not do this math because
let's spend the time doing this.
Do you guys remember when we'd spend 15 minutes every week trying to figure out the finances of Queen Industries? Who's paying for that apartment?
That, I think, was time well spent. But
you gotta look at this information, right? People got really upset on one point in the internet with that Clint had arrows with Pym particles when they used up the last of them in Endgame and they were so scarce. And people were like, whoa, he's just got these. He can put in an arrow and shoot them around. And I was like,
that was a while ago and we got Hank Pym back.
You guys are also paying the attention to the wrong thing.
Exactly. Hank Pym is back.
All fine. Hank Pym
is back. And also,
there are more Pym particles.
Yeah, not just that. Oh, my Pym particles saved the world through time travel? Yeah, I'll make a few more because why would you sit on that?
He is a cranky old man.
Stole like four bottles of it. From
It's also, I like that he asks, I'll ask Scott for it.
Yeah.
Or he says, I'll ask Scott about it because it's like, I could see Scott giving him, Scott's probably just giving them out at Baskin Robbins kind of thing,
I like that you said.
I can see Hank being a curmudgeon about it.
Cap's just got four bottles, he's using them like people would use helium and suck the helium out of balloons. He's just like, oh, check it out. I can make myself small. I can make myself big. I can make myself small. I can make myself big. Other things in this episode I thought were real standouts. I have to say, I came out of this entire series really thinking that one of my favorite characters in it might be Jack.
Oh yeah,
Jack's great.
What a he's turnaround.
And I think that moment is super fun in this episode.
He is so fun. I love that somehow as soon as Jack engages and knocks the guy's sword gun out of his hand, everybody that Jack fights from then, are they carrying a sword or a basic, like, it seems like everybody that engages Jack is somehow in a sword fight, which is weird because they don't have swords at any other point. And I love it. I stopped caring. I'm like, whatever.
They all have guns, but nobody tries to shoot him because he's got a sword.
Yeah, but when he hits people, you hear sort of steel against steel sounds, and it's hilarious.
He's such a ridiculous over the top character. I think that really sold it for me the last week where he had the whole when he was arrested by mistake and he's like, that's all a misunderstanding. And this week you've got the bit where they ask him at the end to join the LARPers and he's like, is that some sort of leisure activity?
I do love it. My favorite line from mostly favorite line from last week was there must be a mistake. I've never worked a day in my life. The most dilettante sword collecting kind of funny thing to say.
And this week he's got a nice back and forth with Kate where she's like, I'm sorry, my mom got you arrested. No, it's fine.
I like that he goes into the kitchen. She takes her mom into the back and then Jack joins them after. And he's like, I really need to talk to you. Because That's his version of being upset that he got set up for some major crime.
Murder. Yeah. Like,
honey, we need to have a little chat on account of the murder rap that you stuck me with.
Yeah, I mean, just a fantastic performance from, I think the actor is Tony Dalton. I think he's great.
Is he related to Timothy Dalton?
No, he is not related to Timothy Dalton. He does look like
too bad because he's got a similar charm and like swagger.
Well, that's what my wife kept saying because she was thinking of Timothy Dalton in The Rocketeer when he plays the bad guy as like Errol Flynnish, you know, and it's like
he's got the mustache, right?
Yeah, all of that. Yeah. No, really fantastic. I feel like a character who's probably, even though he is a comics character, was kind of written to be like, you know, like a disposable one-off character. But I really hope they find a chance to bring him back into something because he's just fun.
Yeah. I would think that they're going to do that. I certainly hope so.
If you kept it, I mean, I don't know. Same way like Jimmy Woo, right? Like I loved Randall Park in Ant-Man and the Wasp, and I was glad they found a place for him. So yeah, they're not idiots. They're not dummies over there. They know when something works well.
Right. So in the comics, Swordsman trains Hawkeye. There's nothing. We could have this Swordsman train Kate.
Right. Yeah, exactly.
Like, Kate, get better at fencing or something. Like, and she's the person who is her weird mentor figure. You know, like the mom's in jail, right?
Now, could be a surrogate dad.
Lean on him.
Or just like my two dads.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, weird uncle.
Speaking of Marvel never leaving meat on the bone, Vincent D'Onofrio returns in this episode. Of course, we saw him teased last week, but we really get him like fully on board this week. I read an interview with him where he says he basically approached it as though it were continuing his character from Daredevil, but that's not like an official sort of line on it, just sort of how he was playing it. I think
it tracks in the same interview. Yeah, I think I watched it, so maybe it was probably the same one. He's saying that obviously the character is basically indestructible now, so that's different. Like, I think he said he's stronger,
and he pulls a car door off too. So he's definitely stronger.
Yeah, which is cool. I have this multiverse. Who cares about that?
Like, yeah, that's fine.
Take him, put him in this one where he's got access to a super soldier serum-y thing from what's her name, Sharon Carter. The power broker. Yeah. All right, and he's definitely got the means and the connections in order to get it. Fine. Good enough. I am perfectly fine with him ripping Carter off and comic book like in this world rather than the
right. And
the
like
devil
John said, you were saying like it's a comic book show, you gotta power people up, right? Like the worst he was doing was fighting, you know, Matt Murdock, who is just a dude who, you know, is really good at martial arts, then you don't need to be super strong. But if you're in a world where there's Avengers and stuff, you probably need to have some powers.
Yeah, I mean, he's going to be fighting Spider-Man.
He's going to grab it. Also, Hawkeye, like, Kate, jumping out of a 30 rock, or was that 30 rock? Yeah, I guess it was 30 rock.
Yeah,
no, it was the building next to it. Who cares? Whatever.
Yeah, I don't know.
That does not make sense. Like, we're already in a heightened world. Obviously, everything's heightened, but like we're in a world where she can just jump out and somehow she's done enough like bow flex so that one rope rubbing against another rope is going to support her weight like from like a 40-story drop. Like,
I was a little wondering about the physics there, but I don't. Again,
yeah, like I would have wrapped my whole butt like. You can climb down a rope, but that's not the.
I would have
way
taken the
it.
Stairs.
You
know,
Yeah. Maybe that's just me.
Just gone
like,
home.
It's also like, where are those bolos? Where are those bolos coming from?
You know.
Yeah, I think like, that's a. She's not, I think she uses those
like
in the
some
comics.
Big sack full of.
Yeah, but I'm okay with that. Just being on her belt, and she's got one.
She's got like knives and stuff. Yeah, I did like that bit where Yelena rips the dress off. Oh no! When she rips the dress off, and you're like, "Did you plan that?
Did you plan that?"
Yeah. No,
I love that she says yes, and Yelena's just like, "Come on,
yeah, no." But Kingpin, yeah, I thought that was exciting to get D'Onofrio back. I feel like his performance here is a little more—it's not as intense in some ways as the Daredevil thing, right? Like, because we got one episode in which for him to like sort of see B-Sep as a character, you can't assume people have seen Daredevil, right? Like, you have to kind of build that character up anew. He's still very threatening.
Yeah, but in this show, he's Bowser, basically, right? It's like beat up the big head boss kind of thing. It's
throw
he's
fireballs,
not,
you know, that kind of thing.
Yeah, he's like less of a he. First of all, in the Daredevil show, he has a goal, and it's half noble and half evil-ish. Right. You know what I mean? Like, he's, and this, we have no idea what he's after.
Right.
Other than he's upset with Kate's mom. And I kind of wanted to talk about that because she threatens him, which I think if you're trying to get out of his organization, both of them, both Echo and Kate's mom, do it, Eleanor, I guess, do it exactly the wrong way. Saying that you've got a dead man switch of stuff yeah. to the Kingpin, that's not going to go well.
No, that's not.
And like pretending that everything's cool. Also, like, I mean, if she was trying to get out, I feel like she could have tried to make a business proposition about it.
Right. I think Maya's was the better choice, obviously, but
yeah,
neither. If you know.
It feels didn't work. Like,
neither of them worked. Yeah.
It feels like we're also trying to build up his reputation in this in this version of the universe, right? Where it's
very
like,
condensed, right?
Yeah. Right, where we don't know, like Clint knows, but like he's not necessarily the sort of big player in this like version of the universe that he necessarily was in Daredevil, where like everybody knows or is scared of him or whatever. It's like maybe we as the audience are learning like exactly what this person is capable of and what are the kind of things that are going to get you into trouble. So like we were reestablishing his threat status anew. I do yeah. think, however, if he was a direct continuation of Daredevil, he would not wear that Hawaiian shirt.
It is from the comics.
But it was
from
a Christmas. Comics.
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah.
It is from the comics, but it's also a Christmas themed thing.
Yeah.
And he's
yeah,
got that like chain, like
I
metal chain necklace.
I was interested by it. It was okay. I thought it was fine. But
yeah, this guy
it did feel maybe a little bit different. But he's got doing the voice, you know, like the voice is the same.
Yep.
And I love that bit where he says, "Does she think she works for Goldman Sachs?"
Yeah. Which is funny because, you know, another criminal enterprise. I just watched The Big Short last night. I'm like, yeah. Oh,
can I just say how glad I am that the return of Vincent D'Onofrio also means the return of John Maltz's Kingpin impression? I am just very happy about this. Yeah.
That is the best. It's just wonderful. What do we think about him getting shot in the face at the end?
I don't think you bring him back for one episode. Come on.
No, I don't think so either. Yeah.
No, of course not.
And I think he's already been interviewed about, you know, like his thoughts about where this goes from here. And he's like, oh, yeah, the continuation of the character. I mean, like, he doesn't seem to think that he's dead. I don't think he's dead either.
No, I don't know.
So. First of all, it's off screen. Second of all, in the Echo comic, I think it's Daredevil.
Yeah, he is
something.
Yeah, he is shot by Echo. Yeah,
she shoots him in the face, and he's blinded for a bit, which you know matches him up with Daredevil and whatever stuff there. Also, I don't know. I'm sure he's got a back to tank or something somewhere that's going to fix him up. You know, he's going to be okay. This guy is more of an Axe body spray guy as opposed to a high end cologne kind of guy, though. Do you know what I mean? Like, one thing that sort of confused me was. We see Eleanor walk into a very fancy building in, I don't know what part of New York, but it looks expensive when Yelena's tailing her. And then this meeting that they have, though, is in, it looks like it's in the garage. It's like meeting in a nondescript Tony Soprano sort of like, you know, not run down, but, you know, like a business under protection sort of.
Right, I took it as
if not just a front.
Yeah, I took it as not his office necessarily. Maybe he's just sort of where the
The
tracksuits are run out of, basically.
Yeah, that's what I took it as too.
Did you notice that he had either a meat grinder or like a pasta machine attached to the side of the desk?
I missed that.
It looks like where you may see a pencil sharpener, there's basically a meat grinder. Like, you know, you'd feed Chuck into it and you'd get ground beef out of it.
That's what you need. I do want to mention the cufflinks that Kate flicks. Those are a callback to the show, right?
Yeah,
like those are the ones
definitely.
he has.
His father's cufflinks.
Yeah, exactly.
I was wrong about that. I called her knocking out Kazi with a coin trick or something, but cool. Works just as well. Well, I was also wrong because I think last time we spoke, I said, "Well, you can't just stab Kingpin." Turns out they can shoot him in the face. So I was wrong about that.
I mean, you can shoot him with several arrows and he's fine.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, I thought it would come down to a detente. Like, I did not expect Kingpin to be ripping cars, like doors off cars and like being super powered, you know?
Yeah, it was startling.
I thought it would be like more of an intimidating presence rather than like an acting not hero. Well, I guess he's a hero for his side. You know what I mean? Like a physical, more of a an abstract presence than a physical presence.
And right. Not a physical threat.
Like
yeah.
Way more physical than sort of an abstract threat.
Yeah. I mean, more reminiscent in some ways of the Michael Clark Duncan performance from the Ben Affleck Daredevil.
Which was the best part of that movie.
He was terrifying, but awesome.
Yeah, I've never seen it.
You've never seen that?
No,
wow.
I've never seen it.
I'm not saying it's good, but I'm surprised that you haven't seen that. I'm just surprised is all.
Well,
I saw that movie.
You know, I watched all those Fantastic Four movies, so
it's probably not as bad as those.
It's better than those. Yeah,
is it really?
He's
okay,
actually
good.
Great. Yeah,
oh, okay. I thought I might be worse because I've heard that it's just abysmally bad. But
it ain't great. Ben Affleck isn't great.
John Favreau plays Foggy Nelson, though.
Exactly.
Yeah. And I saw some pictures of that, and he looked the part. He looked good.
Yeah, he does.
Yeah, and Jennifer Garner is fine. Like she does a good.
I always enjoy her, but yeah,
she's great. Yeah, I mean, she didn't have a lot to work with, but it's she's great. Or you know, she's her
what it is.
Doing her thing.
I never saw the Elektra movie. That I did not see.
I did. That is not good.
Yeah.
Yeah. Don't bother with that. But yeah, Michael Clark Duncan, right?
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
He's great. He's terrifying. He's huge. It's an interesting take on the character, and he is. You know, not to be messed with. I mean, obviously, just look at his stature, but he has such a great delivery, too. It's actually probably makes that movie worth watching a little bit.
Yeah.
Okay. You've got Colin Farrell as Bullseye, just as a super weird version of that character, too.
Yeah, yeah.
Perhaps more comic accurate, but not as good as the one from the show, who is great.
Yes.
The one in the show is terrifying. Man, he's good.
He is really scary.
I think about him fairly often. Like, I just, that one scene in the, I know we're getting off topic here, but that one fight in the office, bulletin office,
so great.
Is a just an amazing scene.
Yeah.
Yeah. When he's dressed up as Daredevil.
Yes.
And,
right.
Yeah.
Yes. Right. That's just a great set piece.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Anyway, this show. What else we got?
The one thing I felt a little bit, I don't know, not let down, but just too obvious or something was the whistle bit.
I didn't see it coming.
And
I should have. I didn't exactly see that coming, but I should have because they had it in some of the previously on little bits before the show started. So I feel like I should have seen it coming, and it just, I don't know. It was okay, but it wasn't my favorite part. That's for sure.
You need a shorthand to say.
Yeah,
there was a lot going on. I was actually really, really close with Natasha, and that's as good as you can get. Really, like what else are you going to say? I know a secret. Like I know your home address. Like what? You could say
I'm wearing
here's the thing, John.
I'm wearing
it's
your
a little bit
all
like
the pockets.
Yeah, right.
It's a little bit like the Martha moment from Batman versus
that
Superman.
Would be funny if he pulls the vest out. He wanted you to have this back.
Yeah, it's under the costume that he just gave.
That's right. That's right.
Or it's just like, or he does both. Like he does the whistle and then he pulls the vest out and then he's got like
and he puts on a red wig and. never mind. This got weird.
Yeah.
Yeah. That could. Yeah. That's at that point she should just get.
Flies a little Cessna
again,
in.
I got the sense that he was willing to lose that fight for the sake of Yelena.
Yeah.
I don't think he was winning that fight either.
No, I don't
well,
well,
no,
I, he wasn't trying. I don't think he was super trying.
Yeah,
to.
I'm not
sure.
Trying.
He was pretty defensive. Yeah. At some point he grabs her and he's got her by the neck. Like he's got her by behind.
Yeah.
And she gets out of it, but it's, I get the sense that
he could have
probably even matched, except he's not fighting to win.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. He's not going to kill her. And that's one of those fights where the only way out is probably to kill the other person.
Which is what he resigns himself to. Right.
He's
like, well, he tries talking, obviously, but he stops fighting. Even when she grabs him at the beginning, he's like, nice to meet you, Yelena. Nice to finally meet you.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it's tricky because I think that fight is not a fight that is really about life and death, right? I mean, I've heard the good advice from writers, novelists, something you talk about writing, or a good fight is like a conversation, right?
That's cool.
We're dealing with this as like, it's both of them dealing with their grief in certain ways. And I think, you know, anybody who's like, oh, well, it's anticlimactic because, you know, we know Yelena is not going to kill him. It's like, well, no, neither of them was ever going to kill the other one. It's not that kind of show. No. So you take that out of the equation.
Anticlimactic? It's like Darth Vader versus Luke Skywalker, anticlimactic in Empire. No, it's not. No. But that's very much a conversation, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
Like, he starts off by toying with him. He's like, but
you don't
okay.
See the, you don't see the reveal coming. I mean...
No, you don't. Right. You definitely don't see the reveal coming. Yeah. But, I mean, he's being given orders not to kill the kid. And he doesn't. He's kind of toying with him. You get to definitely get the sense he's toying with him until he lands a shot on his shoulder and then say, okay, I'm going to disarm you.
He thought it was going to be super easy. And then he's like, okay, this is harder than I thought.
Right. But that's a conversation, right? It's like, I'm coming in. You're like a little guy. I'm just going to take care of you. Oh, well, okay. You're kind of serious. Well, okay. That's the end of that.
Yeah. And so, I mean, this fight is really about Yelena trying to, you know, deal with her own guilt too, right? Like, you know, she feels guilty that she was not around to stop her, you know, from sacrificing
herself. Yeah, like survivor's guilt kind of
thing. Right. Not that she could have. There was no way she was going to be able to pull that off, but like, you still sort of are blaming her, you know, blaming herself. And it's fine. I don't have a problem with that. Like,
it doesn't bother me. Thing is, if Yelena and Natasha had gone to Vormir, I guess, would have been the same fight. Who knows? I mean, probably Natasha would have won. Like, it would have been the same
thing. I'm not going to lie. I thought you said Boromir, and I thought, like, they're going to go, like, Sean Bean is there. And like,
well, if Sean Bean's there, Sean Bean's going to die.
He's dead. Going away. Yeah, he's dead.
One does not simply,
one does not simply get the soul stone.
I honestly wonder if his family makes fun of him for that all the time.
The thing is, I mean, it like that seems like I can see why, you know, you have a conversation with somebody, be like, yeah, we had a secret whistle, but like you teach them the whistle. I don't. That seems a little bit like an extra step that doesn't seem like it would really happen. But it's okay.
I wanted to do a really terrible version of it where he's just like, caca, caca.
Yeah,
right.
My dad's
what is that? You're trying to do a whistle?
My dad's dad had a whistle for each one of his kids. He had three kids, and they had a response, and he would use that to find them. And at one point when I was young, I heard it, you know, and that's weird. But I don't know, sort of like old schooly, like,
yeah,
I don't know. Well, they also spent a lot of time. They grew up in Singapore and stuff. And like this, like a lot of, if your kids are running around in a weird place, you may want a way to call them, like a pet dog, I guess. I don't know. Like it kind of makes sense. I liked it. I thought it worked. It is very gamey. I mentioned earlier that it does feel like a your mom's name is Martha kind of moment. Like it's a little too much of an easier reveal. Yes. But it's shorthand and we had a lot to do. Right. I think you need to elide, like, how do you prove that I was Nat's best friend? I don't know how to do that without slowing everything down. And you need to pop a flare and just be like, it's fine.
It doesn't ruin the, you know, it certainly doesn't ruin the episode because I think it's a great episode.
Yeah.
Just to get
did you expect them to hug?
I'm glad they didn't.
Me too, but I kind of expected it because I think I would have been okay with that too.
Yeah. Yeah. Either way.
Yeah, I don't know.
But she's, you know, she's still easing into the fact that she doesn't hate him. You know, she's not like, once that's over, it's not like you just melt into the other person's arms because you're still part of you that feels like they're the bad guy.
Yeah, to me, it wouldn't have been about him. It would have been about like holding a part of Natasha again.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah.
But... she's a chain killer, so whatever. She just raped. Also, leaving it not entirely clearly resolved leaves space for, you know, whatever future writer may want to do with these characters.
Yep, absolutely. Should we talk about Laura?
Do you mean from this? From this moment forward, as the premise of the whole show,
the spin-off,
the Laura Barton show. Let's do the Laura Barton show. Yeah.
I thought the ending of this show, they should have done like a big cursive script thing that said "Merry Christmas, Guy English."
The end. So again, lots of consternation. I'm rolling my eyes. You can't see it, but you can maybe hear my voice. Consternation about this character, and their relationship to the character who bears the that mantle in the comics. Again, the MCU never shy of remixing things when it feels like it needs to. In the comics, Agent 19 is Bobby Morse, aka Mockingbird. A version of that character appeared in Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., played by Adrian Pilecki. I think they deliberately, you know, made this character Agent 19 to tip the hat to the fact that in the comics, obviously, Bobby and Clint are married. I don't think this character is Bobby Morse, quote unquote, but I think she is essentially either Mockingbird or fills that part, like, you know, someone who's equivalent to a trained S.H.I.E.L.D. agent.
Yeah.
Yeah. Or it's like a double O number, right? Like,
sure. Right. Right. That's right. Yeah. Yeah.
So I mean, some people on Twitter were
really bent out of shape. We're saying, I choose to think that, you know, Adrian Pilecki is her younger sister and she took over. Believe whatever you want to believe. It's not that big a deal.
I don't think she's
As someone who loves Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. and enjoyed the fact that it was tied into the MCU, listened to Marvel when they pretty much told us that it was in the same universe. It's a little annoying to me, but I'm not bent out of shape about, like, I don't feel like I've lost anything in particular. You know, I'm annoyed by the fact that they seem to be pulling the rug out from under that, but I still enjoy.
I mean, are they even really pulling the rug out from under it? I don't know.
Not yet. I mean, I don't think yet.
There's nothing there that can't be, you know, hand waved away if you decide at some point you want to incorporate the continuity.
Yeah. Also, I don't even know if we had Bobby Morse's number in it.
I think it was because somebody else. Well, I don't know. I'm not positive of that, but I thought her name was.
I mean, I don't want to. I think these are in the trailer, whatever. The most recent movie, James Bond is retired again, I guess. I don't know. He feels like he does that every movie. But
he's trying to collect a pension thing.
We've seen multiple 00 numbers reused, right? Like, I think 006 has been a couple of people. Like, whatever. Agent 19. It's fine. And that, who cares? It really doesn't matter. Maybe her maiden name was Morse. Who knows?
Right.
Doesn't matter. Honestly, it doesn't matter. What bugs me a little bit more is that she was like, well, we've been so careful. It's like, have you? Clint's been hanging out with his kids. Maybe she means she's been careful and that she's been keeping a low profile.
Oh, yeah. Maybe that's why.
Yeah,
that's a good explanation for why she's not in New York. I was trying to figure out, like, why that would be.
Yeah, like, she's hiding out because she's not connected to anything, like, except like, some I was real, like, is undercover.
COVID, was it filmed that way because of COVID? Does she not like Jeremy Renner? Or, like, is there something? like, I didn't know what it was.
I would love that possibility.
That makes, like, a lot of sense.
I would love if Linda Cardellini just did not like Jeremy Renner. That would be hilarious.
That was it.
But
that's
they
the
still
whole
keep
thing.
Around because she's Linda Cardellini. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, she apparently pushed for a lot of the agency and stuff that, like, you know.
That's what I read too. Yeah. And thank God, because otherwise it's just like, I'm just I don't know, moss on a tree at home. Like, I'm just holding down the home fires, which is boring as hell.
Right.
And mostly her role in this show, but at least it gives a little bit of, it strengthens Clint's character in it. It's like, okay, look, you married another agent or somebody capable, equivalently capable to Natasha, is, you know, roughly. And why are you taking Haley Steinfeld, what's her name, Kate, under your wing, sort of thing? Like, this is he operates in this world and he is sort of respectful and good with his other agents in a way that is interesting and makes sense. And if she was an agent and they fell in love together, it explains why he would want to help these younger kids out, right? Like, it's like, well, I see a lot of my wife and you, and let's try to get you on a better path, I guess. I don't know. It all fits of a piece of, like, these lifelong sort of agents having a lot of familiarity, and him being in, like, not with her, but him and I keep calling it, what's her name? Laura?
Laura, yeah.
No, Laura, yeah. Him and Laura being like, okay, we've been through this, and now we can use our background to help people who have been in similarly bad situations come up, you know, or at least get in a better mindset. And I like that. It says a lot of stuff about his character, and it's actually heroic in a similar way to the way Sam was in taking care of his veterans, right?
Right. Yeah.
Right. Yeah.
There's a lot that, you know, I think is probably to a benefit, right? Like, I mean, I think you put it right that like the biggest part of this is just like having a relationship for Clint that's not just one-sided and not like, oh, yes. she's a homemaker or whatever, right? Like, I think it would have been a far less interesting dynamic. And in a universe where I think they have tried retroactively and sort of in later things that they went along to more fully flesh out and increase the diversity and, you know, have more types of varied characters. I think it's a nice move. I would love to learn more about that character. I hope that we get a chance to at some point, and I hope we get a chance to see her in the field doing some cool stuff, because that would be fun. But, you know, I also, even as it is, I think it's okay.
Yeah.
And make no mistake about it. They are reaching back and coloring in behind some lines that they just left real sketchy. You know, it's not like this was an intent the whole time.
Right.
But I think it works well for her character and his character and for, you know, the story as a whole.
Yeah, absolutely.
I think it's a good choice. Yeah. And you know, obviously, more Linda is more better. It's just a personal thing.
Yeah. All right. Well, let's see. We've also got at the end, we've got the jokes about the code name. I think several of those, I guess, are things. Some of them are things that she uses in the comics at various points.
You like Lady Hawk? When they said Lady Hawk, I laughed because for whatever reason, Dan, I think you like that movie. Is that true?
I know,
it's Hudson Hawk, but for whatever reason, I think of anything that ends with Hawk, I'm like, yeah, Dan's going to love
that. Dan loves that.
I've only seen that movie like once and it was years ago, so I don't have a particular enthusiasm for it. But I think she has used other code names. Hawkeye, Hawkette, Lady Hawkeye, Lady Hawk Guy. You know, some way I thought, you know, and the unspoken bit at the end, like Cap saying Avengers at the end of Age of Ultron and them cutting off the Assemble, felt like, you know, obviously she's just going to go by Hawkeye, right?
Because cuts to the title card.
Yeah, exactly. Hawkeye, is, I mean, that's the same, and that's the thing in the comics, right? Is they constantly just refer to each other as Hawkeye. I always thought was funny and enjoyable.
And I like his implicit. I like the implied thing of there's like, you keep making this a gender thing. It's like, what? You're just Hawkeye. Just go take the name, run with it. It doesn't matter. Like,
right?
Hawkette? What? Come on.
They're all bad.
Yeah.
Anything else we want to talk about? And
is there gonna? Well, I guess let's do the. I was going to ask if this is season two, but maybe we can do that after the...
you want to do a rating?
The ritual? Yeah, let's do the ritual first. Yeah. Are we missing anything? Is Kazi dead?
He is dead.
Yeah, he seemed pretty dead.
He's dead. Yeah.
Kingpin, not dead. Kazi
dead. The Echo show is going to be interesting. Good setup. I like that character. I love the actress.
Yeah, she's really good.
Yeah,
I learned
like
at some
the,
point
I
that
like the balls
of
like or the sorry the balls the I don't even want to say courage. I like the determination to center a show on a character that requires you to read subtitles. Right?
Yeah,
unless you read ASL, but like even like and I like that. That's really a massive company, but sort of like. Taking their power and stretching the bounds in an interesting way. They didn't need to do that show. Like, no, who was clamoring for an Echo show?
Right, especially they built that show around her
and
after. Her having never basically acted before this. Before the show was even out, right? Like, they announced that well before Hawkeye came out, that they would have a whole show around her, which was fascinating. Yeah, I don't even know that character very well from the comics. Like,
me neither.
But I'm intrigued now to see what that show is about, because it seems like, you know, if you want to take at face value that she shot Kingpin and killed him, which I don't think any of us believe, but like it seems like her goal is, you know, taking him. Well, that's that whole everything we know about her has basically been upended. Right. So you have to set up a whole new conflict, potentially. I don't know. I'm just very curious to see where it goes.
I do expect readers, I don't know, flip ahead a paragraph here. So I don't know. 30 seconds. As of now, I do expect Matt Murdock to show up in the Echo show.
It seems like a good bet. If you're not going to do another Daredevil show, and I think their hesitation around that would primarily be like they don't want to be seen as making a season four and having to deal with choosing to embrace or not embrace the continuity of the earlier show is just that's a no-win situation right there.
Right.
So
yeah, so I would expect that that's part of the calculus in terms of doing the Echo show is like, well, we can do this. We've introduced Vincent D'Onofrio. Cool. I'm going to elide the character's name again, but we have this other character that we, we're very familiar with, and that can play into her story, and that can prop up, sort of using an unknown as the principal character. And I think it should be really cool. Bare minimum, I mean, admire is a big word. I respect that they're going to drop, millions of dollars on one of these, on something that is like an interesting, it's not a slam dunk, right?
And
I think that's cool. I think that's a worthwhile gamble. It makes me feel like they're not just walking to the piggy bank all the time. They're actually trying to do some cool stuff, which is, interesting.
Yeah,
WandaVision was also cool stuff. That was trippy as hell. So
I think your point of the something that relies on subtitles and stuff, I think Shang-Chi is another great example of something where we're not going to shy away from, like, look, we're going to have scenes in Mandarin because that's what these characters would speak, right? Deal with it. It's like, it's fine. You can read subtitles. And I think that's great. I think it shows.
I mean, that at least plays well in a large part of a big market. You know, that's
sure. Yeah, I mean that's certainly part of it, I imagine. But at the same time, I think there's also, it shows a willingness to be inclusive about the cultures and, of the characters that you're featuring, right? Like.
Mm-hmm.
You having them be Chinese characters who speak only in English all the time would not seem to be particularly true to life. But I don't know.
This is a little bit, we're going to meander the conversation a little bit. Guess what? Is it possible that Black Panther taught them that, like, hey, look, if we actually respect the creators and what they want to say mm-hmm. around their own circumstances, we can ultimately I don't think this is 100% not an altruistic organization.
Sure.
But right, the two, like, when the two things can go hand in hand, like, well, look, if we listen to these creators, we can tap these new markets and we can make a lot of money. And ultimately, probably, I mean, doing the world not a favor, but like showing more of the world as the way that it is not really a negative, right? Like I fail to see the negative of making a superhero TV show centered around somebody who's deaf. Go ahead.
Just an ancillary thing to point out to John's point, because I thought I had read this and I wanted to confirm before saying it, but yeah, Shang-Chi has not been released in China.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah, because there was a whole bunch of, like, some sort of conflict in politics about that. So according to Wikipedia, despite this, by early October, it was still listed as to be determined to release in China. I think there was some concern about the negative portrayal of his father as a character and the stereotype, like, basically everything associated with the idea of the Mandarin, right? Like, and that was part of it that was suggested, but I also think there's, you know, there are challenges there. There are, it's not as simple as like this shows Chinese culture and therefore they'll love it in China, right? Like there's a lot going on there.
True. Yeah, but it's more about the diaspora, right? Also,
sure.
I find that really weird that the PRC is being wacky about.
Oh yeah,
what,
yeah. You think
what content?
Yeah, they're usually very straightforward about these things.
For sure. Yeah, yeah. I mean, you know,
yeah.
Never draw a picture of a guy standing in front of a tank. But other than that, they're very, yeah. very. Open.
Ask Apple about how much money they had to invest in China.
Oh, God, yeah.
Anyway.
Yeah.
Getting into a different show.
Well, I mean, to go back to your point, what you were saying before, I agree that I think the success of Black Panther and to a lesser extent, the success of stuff like Captain Marvel,
I think they always knew they needed to grow it. Captain
right?
Marvel's like a white girl power thing. Like,
not, right, but I mean, you know, that was like the first MCU movie to have a sole like woman, you know, main character yes. essentially, right? Like I think it is
very much a it is a gender thing rather than, well, like specifically a gender role within
sure.
An American culture rather than reaching to other cultures and other cultures, including yeah. Deaf culture, which is, you know, the subcultures for a bunch of people who have commonalities in the way that they experience the world.
Yeah, absolutely.
Which, you know, again, I guess that, yeah, that matches the gender
think,
thing.
I so, think they yeah. knew they always needed to move beyond sort of the core stories they were telling at the beginning, right? And then part of that was going to be broadening the audience. And especially they did take flak for it early on, right? Like, and as they should
yeah,
have, right?
Rightfully
they did,
so.
Yeah, yeah. They did really prioritize like a crew of, you know, straight white guys as their heroes. And yeah. so broadening that, I think is just a smart move on every front, right? And if you look good while doing it, that's a bonus for you. But I think that they, looking forward at a lot of the characters they're sort of drawing in now, I think that they have realized there is a lot to gain from introducing characters, you know, whether it's Ms. Marvel or America Chavez, who's showing up in the Doctor Strange mm-hmm. 2. Like, there's a lot of these characters who are beloved, especially because they sort of demonstrate the breadth of this universe rather than having it be sort of a restrictive, you know, you can only be a superhero mm-hmm. if you're a white guy.
Right.
Yeah.
Anyway,
Vigil?
Yeah, let's do a rating. Guy, why don't you go ahead?
The episode was a Christmas owl biff. It was good. It was a lot of fun. It was silly. There was a lot of things that didn't make sense, and I really enjoyed each and every one of them. I kind of liked the reveal of the Kingpin being a superhero. Powered sort of, you know, indestructible kind of guy.
Yeah.
I like that it was Kate that went up against him and managed to live. I think mm-hmm. that was...
It's a good fight.
You know, when Clint's like, man, you walked away from that. That's pretty impressive. And I like that. I like that as a basic thing. Like, and again, End of Empire, when Luke manages to live, cool. You know, that's, wow. I can't believe you got away with that because that should not have happened. So yeah, I liked this episode a lot. I liked the Tracksuit Mafia guys. They were funny. Gotta help those guys. I don't think it works like Spider-Man's webs where they dissolve within an hour. I think they're just stuck like that forever and they're being fed to
yeah,
birds.
I
like,
yeah,
that's,
I don't think it wears off.
It's horrible, but I mean,
I think
a lot of people get killed
open
in this
that,
one.
That truck and eat them.
Come on. Yeah.
That's
yeah.
what owls
yeah.
do.
Yeah.
Yeah. Those guys did not meet a great end.
What are you going to do? What are you going to do?
Yeah, I mean, I liked it. I love seeing trick arrows. I love seeing... Did we see a trick shot, John? Like, was there a bounce off a wall?
He shoots without looking behind him in that one...
One time, right?
Yeah, one yeah. time. I don't think there are any where he
like
bounces
a bang shot
any
or
arrows
anything.
Off of anything.
Yeah.
But, you know,
yeah.
it's good
But
enough,
a whole though. Bunch of trick arrows. That was yeah. fun. I liked her use of two arrows to take down the tree, like cutting the wire mm-hmm. and using an acid thing.
Yeah.
Fun stuff that I kind of wished we'd seen in Arrow a little bit more. That
oh,
would be
yeah,
fun.
Absolutely.
The I mean, season yeah, as a whole,
this point, but...
great. I liked it way more than I expected to. It didn't hold a lot of surprises, which I also sort of came to respect it for, if that makes sense. Do you know what I mean? Like. Mm-hmm. It was yeah. kind of by the numbers, like maybe Jacques
yeah.
or
well, that,
Jack.
And that was
it
one
was
thing
like
we didn't
discuss.
At the very end, you know, them showing up at the ranch, we knew that we That seemed like exactly what was going to happen, and that's exactly what.
Yeah, you called that weeks ago. Yeah.
Which is great. It wasn't a very good. I mean, I wish that it, in a way, I wish it had been slightly different because we had called it, but it was good in the way, and it was the way that it should end.
Right. Yeah. So yeah, and the season as a whole, really great. I would like to see a season two. Who knows? I'm going to try some to write it, but let's center this one more around Kate with Clint as the backup kind of character. Do you know what I mean?
Clint becomes the swordsman. Laura in the second season.
Sure. Oh yeah.
That'd be great. On the phone for most of it.
Yeah.
Yeah. That'd be great. Yeah. I would like to see this, especially and huge kudos to putting Yelena and Kate in the same place at the same time and having that relationship work. That was great. Honestly, some of the most fun, silly, goofy TV I've seen in ages. And it was good. I enjoyed every moment.
Yeah, I feel like having put them in the same place, the one thing that now everybody really wants to see is them fight together, like against people. I feel like if you don't deliver on that at some point, I really want to see them team up to fight somebody. Like that just me.
I kind of like the slap fights. I kind of like the sibling, I want to see them try to get that last piece of apple pie. I feel like
they can do a little bit of both, honestly. They're still against each other somehow, but they're
that's a little bit what they
someone,
did.
There's also someone who's worse that they're fighting.
They did that
against.
In Black
Widow. Yeah, they're going
Widow
against the
bit,
same
right?
target.
Yeah.
Same target, but with like different sort of secondary objectives kind of thing. Like, yeah.
John, you gotta.
Yeah, no, it's a biff. I'm not sure if this is my favorite episode or not. I mean, the second one or the third one? I can't remember. But the one with the car chase,
I think it's three.
So good that that might be my favorite. But it's very good. I have just the smallest of quibbles about a few things, as I said, that I already talked about. But overall, I think they really stuck the landing, and the whole series was absolutely delightful from start to finish. So, and they did. I don't think there's any episode that was unlike Falcon and the Winter Soldier. There's none that's a dog, and that's something that's a real feather in your cap when you put out. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's only six episodes, but still,
they're all
really, really good.
Yeah,
and I'm very happy with the show.
I was thinking about that actually because I was re-listening to one of the Daredevil soundtracks. And I was like, wow, I remember these shows being really good, but they're 13 episodes.
They're 13
and I had
episodes.
Had my moment of thinking,
so I think that's maybe part of the reason why, but that's a good reason to do six episodes.
Yeah, I think they've really nailed the idea, like we're going to tell a story in six episodes.
Yeah, like a long movie.
Yeah, exactly. And I think it really works. It's a different structure than a movie, but it still manages to play out where you got to have your payoffs in the episode, and you got to have your cliffhangers, etc. But like all of those really work together here. I mean, this episode, for sure, a biff for me. I don't know. I really have a hard time distinguishing between favorites, but I love so much of this episode. Like I said, the Kate Yelena fight, the showdown on the ice skating rink, like all of that is just spectacularly well choreographed. Every scene that Florence Pugh and Hailee Steinfeld are in together is absolute gold. Mm-hmm. And you know, bringing Vincent D'Onofrio back, like all of this, it really, really tied everything together. I will go so far as say obviously giving the entire series a biff. I think it's my favorite, and I'll tell you, I didn't think going in that it would be this way, but I have to say what I love about it is small stakes, small problems, like people with no superpowers dealing with, how do we solve these issues sort of on the ground, right? Like, I think I love that groundedness of it, even though it is ridiculous at times and over the top. It has a very person level character driven conflict that I really enjoy. Like it's just the sweet spot for me. Like, you know, I've liked all the series to varying degrees, but this one to me really felt like we're gonna create this small scale and we're gonna like pour everything into that. And it managed to, as John said, really nail the landing. So I'm delighted by it. I hope there is a season two. Like you guys, I hope it's a little more Kate forward. I would say the back end of the Fraction run, which they didn't do much with here, there is like a whole Kate section where she goes off to California and essentially becomes like a PI, which is fun and could be entertaining, I think. So there's a lot of possibility with these characters. And given how successful this show was, I have to imagine they will do something else.
So yep. Apparently it was the least popular Marvel TV show that they've released.
By what metric?
I don't know because it's not like they released numbers. I just read that somewhere. I'm like, I don't know how you're getting that. I don't know.
But the reviews special were commendation. Great, so I don't know, you know, take exactly. away from whatever you yeah. want from that.
Special commendation for being a Dark Horse winner. Because I'm not sure if it's my favorite. I think maybe WandaVision.
Yeah, I don't
only
know.
Because I can
don't
sit
pick,
with some.
I don't want to pick between.
Me too.
Sure. Ex- in this. Yeah.
Exactly.
They're
only,
all very
I
different.
Think I, can, I have sat and watched WandaVision with Amanda, who's not typically interested in this kind of stuff. And she enjoyed it. And we enjoyed it. You know, the fight at the end is a little over the top. You know, well.
But it's a Marvel thing.
It's so very it's Marvel-y happen. Kind of
yeah.
thing.
Yes.
Yeah, it's going to happen. And I'm not sure if this one would have the same sort of land the same kind of way. Because it doesn't have that sort of central conceit of, you know, the first, what, 3-4 episodes are sitcom-based kind of thing. But this one was so well done. It was so great. I did not expect it to be this great. And I really, really enjoyed it. It was fun and funny. And I think they just did such a phenomenal job with a character who kind of, you know, it kind of gets made fun of, but it really, really worked. And they brought it all together. And so, yeah, I just wanted to give them a special extra biff for doing something that I don't think many people thought would have worked really well if you just saw it on paper. But
it
really, really worked. Yeah.
All right. Well, that is our review of Hawkeye. Do we want to take, let me see, how are we? We're at about an hour. I don't know if we want to take more time to talk about anything
talk
else.
Talk about the other thing.
Talk about the other thing, but.
Yeah, that would take a lot longer.
That'll take a lot longer. Well, guess what? We have no shows starting next week. So next week we can devote an entire episode to talking about, say, Spider-Man No Way Home. Maybe we'll chat about that.
Yeah. Everybody, wait, can they go see it?
It's still in theaters only, so it's going to be a little while. Yeah. But if you can always bank it and listen to it later, it's fine.
Yeah. Bank it.
We've all
seen it, so obviously things are not great now. Things are very much less than great now. So I would feel bad encouraging you to go.
Yeah,
see anything in
yeah.
the theater.
I, but you know, save the episode. Watch it at your when you can watch it at your leisure at home. You can queue up the podcast and listen. Then I do think. Since we've got a couple weeks, I think, before, I think Legends returns around the 12th of January, which is, what, 2 weeks from now or so?
Yeah.
Yeah, at some point I'd love to do, we just didn't end up talking about Shang-Chi ever, and I think, or as like the three of us, I think, and since it's now on Disney+, maybe at some point, if we have another break, I'd be happy to rewatch that and just have a chat about that too. But next week we should talk about Spider-Man, since, why not?
Sure.
Well, yeah, I think it's also going to inform a lot of things going forward.
Yes. Yeah. There's some big stuff there. So, all right. Yeah. Well, until then, I would like, as always, to thank my co-hosts, John Maltz. Thanks so much for being here.
I got to respond to this email, you guys. I'm starting to fade.
Guy English, always a pleasure.
End of a year. Another year of dealing with you two idiots, and I can't think of a better way to spend like an hour every week. Thank you for it's always fun. Thanks. I don't know. I'm getting sappy. I'm in a sappy mood these past few days, and it's been lovely. You're all biffs, and the readers, pick up your game. But everybody, yeah, you two are great.
Well, thank you everybody out there for reading along. We hope you've had I was gonna say a great 2021, but let's be honest. Hasn't really been great for most of us. I hope that we've been
adequate 2021.
Yeah. I hope we've been able to bring a little bit of joy and light to your 2021. If not, you know, with our japes, then at least from you laughing at us. One of those, right? Come on. we look forward to continuing to delight you in 2022. As always, feel free to shoot us a note at biff@theincomparable.com or at biffcast on Twitter. We do read every letter we get, and we appreciate all of them, even if we don't immediately get a chance to respond. But thank you so much for sending them in. And we will see you next year.
sounds like you just signed my high school yearbook. See you next year. Come on.
Wow. Don't ever change.
Next week.
Have a great summer.
It's next week.